When you buy Kroger brand products, you feel like you're winning. That's because they offer proven quality at lower than low prices. In fact, we guarantee that you and your family will love how Kroger brand products taste, or you get your money back. So next time you're shopping for the family, look for delicious Kroger brand products, because they'll make you all feel like you're winning. Shop now, in-store, or online. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
Let's clear out winter and clean up the lawn with Spring Black Friday savings at the Home Depot. Right now, get the Ryobi One Plus leaf blower for just $89 and make your lawn work easier with a powerful 90 miles an hour of clearing power. And with convenient online shopping, you can order on the app, pick up in store, and get outside sooner. Get your yard spring ready with the Ryobi One Plus leaf blower, now just $89 during Spring Black Friday at the Home Depot. How doers get more done.
Hi, I'm Giancarlo Esposito, and I'm here to introduce you to my
new series, Parrish.
My character, Gray Parrish, was a getaway driver.
I'm retired from a life, you know that.
He's in a world over his head.
Tell me about this driver job.
And he's asked to start to figure things out.
I did what you told me to.
He will try to do what's right and seek justice.
Parrish, all new Sundays at 9 on AMC and stream on AMC Plus.
How is it having Rafa back in the city just a couple of weeks after his incredible win? Do you think he's gonna keep with that momentum?
The same guys are here battling out. You know, Rafa is motivated as always when he's practicing, and funny enough, he's one of the very few Masters 1000 that he's never won.
If you can pick out of everything you mentioned, the Davis Cup captain, Fed Cup captain, TV, tournament director, what do you enjoy the most?
I think being a player was the most thrilling and exciting, because you work so hard in the shadow. People don't see what you're doing, you know, when you're home, when you're practicing 4 hours a day. And
doing everything else, the TV, or organizing the tournament, it's so much harder than being the player.
Well, yeah, because you have to deal with a lot of more issues. When you're a player, all you have to think about is very selfish, actually.
Okay, thank you so much for your time. First of all, I want to ask you, how challenging is it to put tournaments on, given all the circumstances that we are living in at the moment?
Well, it just like Roland Garros, it was very frustrating, because until the last day, when the president of France made his speech, we didn't know if the tournament was going to take place or not. Mm. The police told us a month before that we would be able, or 3 weeks before, to host the tournament with 1,000 spectators, just like in Roland Garros. You know, we thought, well, that's better than nothing, at least on television. You know, you hear people clapping, there's a bit of excitement, and that relates, I think, pretty well. So when Mr. Macron said that, unfortunately, it was going to be a confinement again, we thought, we probably are going to be cancelled. 24 hours later, we had the okay from the police department that the tournament could take place behind closed doors. So we felt, well, that's better than nothing, and surely the players felt that way, and we got a lot of nice word from the players when they actually arrived in Paris in the next days and the following days that you know, thank you for making the tournament available for us.
Do you feel there's a different mentality for the players being now in the tournaments, appreciating everything much more and what you do for them?
I think so. You know, what's funny is when you know, we moved Roland Garros early in the season without basically telling everyone, because we felt some other tournaments might move as well towards September and October. We got some criticism, which was normal. And what's funny now is, and nice, you know, I've had players and people from other countries just telling us, hey, guys, you know, we were a bit maybe hard on yourself at the time, but looking back, it was the right move. And congratulations on having Roland Garros, because, you know, besides Wimbledon, three of the majors took place this year. And having a Masters 1000 in Paris at the end of the year, you know, we did the best we could for the game, the promotion of the sport, and for the players as well.
How is it having Rafa back in the city just a couple of weeks after his incredible win? Do you think he's going to keep with that momentum?
I don't know. You know, it's amazing. So strange, first of all, to know that a few weeks ago we were outside in Roland Garros playing on the clay. Now it seems, you know, where usually we have a few months to get ready for the Rolex Paris Masters. The same guys are here battling out. You know, Rafa is motivated as always when he's practicing. And funny enough, he's one of the very few Masters 1000 that he's never won. So I think he's in a quest, and maybe for him it's just an opportunity to, you know, get one more Masters 1000 under his belt. He's sure he's very focused, and he trains very hard. And you know, it'll be nice to see him on another surface, indoors, where in the past he hasn't really been really, really successful, you know, compared to clay or outside events. And the new generation, like Tsitsipas and Zverev and Rublev and all those guys, you know, want to probably prove that now they are the ones who are going to work on their footsteps. So that's why I think the tournament could be very exciting again this year.
Why do you think that is, that he hasn't really been able to be that successful indoor on a hard?
Well, I mean, he's got to the final once, he got the semis twice. It's always, you know, difficult to criticize or to judge someone on his average results here when you compare how good he was on clay or on outside hard courts or even on grass. I think Rafa has that ability to adapt to the difficult conditions, whether you play in Australia in the wind or you play in Roland Garros on the clay, to slide and to adjust to the ball that's constantly moving. I think he's so good mentally that on the long term, he's always the kind of player who finds a way to win a match. Indoors, there's no sun, no wind, no bad bounce. You know, it's normally the matches are really short, best of three sets. You know, guys go at it, you know, and they take a lot more risks, and that's rewarding sometimes. So he probably feels a bit more pressured when he plays indoors. He has less time to impose his rhythm. And probably that's why he's losing to guys that have nothing to lose against him. He's a target. And although he's played some good matches, he's lost a few against guys who probably play their best matches of their lives that day.
Hey, I want to make this for a second about you, because I'm sure you are sick of talking about the tournaments and other players. So I want to make you feel like a player again.
Thank you.
I want to ask you, what did help you when you retired from unbelievable tennis career to make the transition to do something else easier?
I don't know. You know, I have found that I was always very lucky. I don't know if you have the same feeling, Daniela. We grew up doing sports. It could have been ice hockey, could have been tennis, soccer, or, you know, our parents, our family, brothers were playing tennis. And my father was a tennis coach, so I played tennis. And I never thought I was going to, you know, make a living playing tennis when I was a kid growing up. At that time, you know, players were not making a lot of money playing tennis. And so when I played my first Roland Garros and had a wildcard as a junior, I was 17. I was so excited just to be part of that unbelievable show, tournament. And that lasted for almost 15 years. And I always felt so grateful that even without having that in mind, I was able to be successful, although I never had, you know, records close to Rafa or Novak or those guys. I would have dreamed of doing that, but I've made a good living and won a few tournaments, big tournaments in my career. And it seemed like my whole life actually has been pretty fortunate, because when I stopped, you know, Yannick Noah was a Davis Cup captain and the Fed Cup, and he stopped and he said, "Hey, you should take this over. This is something you're going to enjoy." And I thought, "Oh, okay, why not?" And I tried, and it was very exciting. I learned a lot from, you know, working with girls and with guys, and it was a great experience. And then I was doing TV at the same time, and I found that, you know, once again, very intellectually very interesting, you know, to have a different look and to express, you know, your ideas about the game. And after that, you know, the Federation asked me, "Guy, do you want to would you like to be involved in the tournament in Bercy, in the Rolex Paris Masters, and then a few years later in Roland Garros. And I was always surrounded by my friends, tennis players, tennis coaches, and guys I'd worked with. You know, that's why I think I'm very, very lucky, and I still do that as of today. And the years go by, you know, it seems very, very quickly. So, you know, just being here to talking with you today about that sport we all love, you know, is wonderful. So I guess I was not the worst at it, but I gave my best. And I hope that would last for another few years.
If you can pick out of everything you mentioned, the Davis Cup captain, Fed Cup captain, TV, tournament director, what do you enjoy the most, if you can pick one, or is different?
I think being a player was the most thrilling and exciting, because you work so hard in the shadow. People don't see what you're doing, you know, when you're home, when you're practicing 4 hours a day, and when you actually perform well during a big match and you win, it's so rewarding. You know, you're so happy about yourself, and you know what you've gone through. And because you're so stressed for such a long time, it's just a relief every time you win. I think I will never experience those kind of emotions again. But talking about emotions, when, you know, Roland Garros happened and on the match point when Rafa wins or Ashleigh Barty won or Sharapova won at the time, we're so proud, because as a team, you know, we managed to make this event successful. And it was, as you can imagine, it was a lot of tension, a lot of question marks, a lot of issues to deal with. And when finally everyone is happy, they had a great 2 weeks, you know, we knew we had something to do with it. So being a player was probably the most exciting. But the satisfaction you get out of completing a good task, I think is nice as well.
Do you agree with me what I have experienced just the last couple of years, that doing everything else, the TV or organizing the tournaments, it's so much harder than being the player?
Well, yeah, because you have to deal with a lot of more issues. When you're a player, all you have to think about is very selfish, actually.
It's all about you.
Yeah, it's when am I going to have breakfast or have my match at 12, so I should eat at 9:30 and warm up maybe. And then everyone gets ready for you, get your rackets ready, your partner to warm up, and then you have your massage in the afternoon and ride the bike. And then, oh, you know what, I'd like to eat maybe Italian in the evening. Oh, sure, you know, Daniela, let's go eat Italian. And basically you leave that for 15 years.
Yep.
And okay, you stress before a match, but...
yeah, when it's all about you, huh? Yeah.
Yeah, and but yeah, I think getting older, you're aware of that, and you know, that's why you sometimes when you talk to younger kids, you say, you know, enjoy it as much as you can, because that's not going to last for a long time. It's a great life you guys are living. You make, you know, you can make a lot of money living your passion, and it's not that difficult in terms of intensity and in terms of concentration. You know, people go to work from 8 in the morning to 6 in the evening every single day of their lives, and they still do the best they can. You know, 4 hours a day on the court is not the end of the world.
Yeah, totally. So if you knew what you know now, would you have done something different as a player, knowing how much it takes to organize tournaments and all of that?
Yes. Well, as a player, I would have done things differently. I'm sure probably the same with you. I think you lose time. I mean, the career is so short, and you lose time because you don't know where to go, how to handle yourself. You have so many question marks. Am I good enough? Can I do this? Can I beat that girl? Should I play with that racket? Should I change strings? Should I go more to the net? Should I work on my grass court game? Should I maybe try this other coach? Should I blah, blah, blah? And basically your whole career basically is you have to make choices, right?
Yeah.
And, you know, looking back, I think I would have done things a bit differently on some parts of my game, on my preparation, on my recovery as well, on my material. I think I would have mixed up strings. You know, I played with gut my whole career. And I think, you know, mixing gut with polyester strings, I think is probably something I should have done.
Yeah.
And I would have had, I'm sure, a much greater records in my career. But at the time, you know, Stefan Edberg and Becker and those guys were playing with gut. So we thought, okay, gut is the way to go. And that's why when I talk to kids now and young players, I say, listen, if Federer and Djokovic are playing with mixed strings, you just do it. I mean, they were smart enough. They experienced everything. And that's what you should be doing. So I think I would be a lot more curious about rackets, strings, where to get ready, and you know, in different maybe academy or talking different people. And but you know, it's so easy to say that now that it's over. But to actually pass that legacy to some younger players if they want to, I think is nice, because what do you do with your experience if you don't share it with someone else? You know, I feel sometimes being a tournament director is a bit frustrating, because there's so much more that I know about being a professional player that goes to waste because I don't share it with anyone. And so sometimes I talk to players and I said, French guys, or I said, well, hey, if one day you want to have dinner, call me up. I'll be happy to have dinner with you. It's not that I want to buy them dinner. It's just that I want to help them reach their potential quicker. And if I might tell them 20 things, maybe two of them will be useful to them. But, you know, you want to give it to them, because otherwise, you know, what's the use? And we were players too. And sometimes we think we know everything, and we just listen to your mom or your dad or that one coach. Mm-hmm. And you won't listen to anyone else, especially not, you know, 50-year-old past champions who probably think that they know everything. Which I don't, by the way.
Well, I'm going to say right now that you should be doing something like this much more often, because like you said, it's such a gift, the experience we have. And we need to share it. So go out there and do something where you can share it.
Well, you know, I did it with the girls, and it was a very nice experience working with Amélie and Marie Pierce and all the girls from the Fed Cup, because I didn't work with girls before. And, you know, I enjoyed that a lot, although it was just maybe 4 weeks of the year, you know, getting together. But you know, now being the tournament director on Roland Garros and Rolex Paris Masters is not that simple. But you know, whenever I can, you know, I try to give a few tips there and there. And
you know, we actually played against each other. You were the captain.
I remember
when we played in Bratislava. Yeah,
exactly.
Gosh, that was.
I was in the summer. I remember it was in the summer.
Yeah.
And
that was fun.
No, but it was you know once again, it's, I think the what's very special about being on the team, and we all very selfish, is to actually share things together for a week, and you can lose a match and your friend is winning her match and it puts the team back in the race. And to find ways to actually make the best possible team, singles and doubles, and the crowd is so involved, you know, in wherever you play, in any country of the world you play, the crowd is really involved, like more than in any other tournament. And when you're part of that experience, I think it's wonderful. Mm-hmm. So when we won, we were so excited sharing that emotional together. When we lost, we took our flight back. We were all kind of depressed. But
wait, I think you stayed that night. You didn't go right away.
No, but I mean, and sometimes, you know, you give your best and you lose, and well, you might as well go out and celebrate, because sure. You know, you're going to hang yourself because you lost a tennis game.
Yeah. I know, Guy, how crazy busy you are. So I'm just going to ask you the very last question who I ask all my guests, because the podcast is called The DNA. So it's really about the values that we have in ourselves. What do you believe that it's helping you to be where you are? Is it the discipline, the work ethic, or what did you get from tennis the most that you are using all your life?
I think sports in general is a great way of teaching you how to be a better person. You have to follow rules. You have to follow a discipline. You have to take care of yourself mentally and physically. You have to respect your opponent. You can't do that on your own. You need help and support from other people. You have to listen. And in life, if you respect and you follow those golden rules, I would say, in the end, you can be proud of yourself. And no matter if you rank number one in the world or number 150 in the world, you can't only do your best. And whatever happens in the end, you have to accept it. You know, some people stop their career because they are injured and they can't keep on playing. Some people like Mats Wilander, you know, won so many majors and he just had enough. He just didn't have the fire anymore. And he did other things in his life and he seemed to be very happy now, but he reached his full potential. So I think for that matter, tennis is a great university of life. And as of today, I try to sometime remember and follow those golden rules. So
thank you so much.
Thank you, Daniela.
This was, yeah.
Hi there. I hope you have enjoyed today's episode of the Real DNA podcast. Don't forget to subscribe either on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts from.
Refinancing your car at Kemba Financial Credit Union can get you quick access to cash to help manage high rate debts and expenses. Get up to $500 next day cash back. Plus, no payments for 90 days and take cash equity out. Make your car work for you and drive away with extra cash. Apply at Kemba.org. Restrictions apply. Offer ends April 30th, 2024. Federally insured by NCUA.
Asking the right questions can greatly impact your future, especially when it comes to your finances. So if you're looking for a financial advisor you can trust, certified financial planner professionals are committed to acting in your best interest. That's why it's got to be a CFP. Find your CFP professional at letsmakeaplan.org.
You deserve a moment to yourself every single day. And a delicious bite of a Keebler Sandies can give you that comforting pause. Celebrate the end of your workday with the melt-in-your-mouth magic of a Keebler Sandies. This magic is baked into simple shortbread cookies by Ernie and the Keebler Elves. So as another busy Tuesday flies by, make the most of your me moment. Take a pause and enjoy a Keebler Sandies.